This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to the program. It's good to have you along today. We'll be talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. April has been set aside for that once again this year, and we've taken the mic to Transitions of Pennsylvania, based in Lewisburg, where we'll be hearing from the outreach coordinator today, Lisa Eero. Also, Rachel Farrow, the education specialist at Transitions, both of whom have come on board recently, and they're here to give us an update on an issue that has been around for a very long time. Thanks for joining us on the program today, Lisa and Rachel.
April is designated as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Could one of you first just define sexual assault? What is under that umbrella of that term?
Well, it's a really broad term, and I would say, sexual assault is unwanted sexual contact in any way. A lot of people think of the term rape, especially people, in the news, in the media, you think of just the standard, the rapist, the idea of that. But sexual assault is, sexual harassment, unwanted touching, groping, and also, looking into it as far as, sexual deviancy with online. That all falls under, that umbrella of sexual assault awareness.
Okay. And I've been doing this for 30 years, so that online, that's like a new part of the definition.
Oh, absolutely, and it's growing by the day, and I wish it wasn't. And that's, one of the things that we're really trying to step up our game is the awareness of how, traditional sexual assault is really getting digital, even right here in our community.
So it really is a broad
yes,
definition.
Very broad.
How big is the problem?
Global, international, global. And the thing that makes it really unique is the fact that not only is it such a huge global problem, but it's also very granular. It's in every single school, every single community, every single, it touches everybody, and that's on a large scale and a small scale.
Statistic-wise, how many people would you say are affected, or is that because of the growing nature of the definition, is that really hard to even pinpoint?
1 in 4 women.
1 in 4.
1 in 4. And I always challenge people, especially if they're out in a public place. I like to say if you're at the grocery store, count 1, 2, 3, 4 with the women that you see. And every time you say, a 4, you hit a 4, that is statistically how many women would be affected by sexual assault in their lifetime.
Okay.
And traditionally, the average age for it to start is between 13 and 18.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And the one thing I've been reading a lot about lately is street harassment. Is it a power thing in that case? Is it like, I think I'm being complimentary? It almost is presented as that.
And the catcalling thing, it's interesting because you think of it in a sense, if you've ever heard, the idea of there's the patriarchy, which is this male privilege by virtue for centuries. Men have been the ones in power, have held that kind of that idea of that dominion over women. So that idea of, the catcalling, it's almost as though she is forced to listen to me. She is forced, this should be a compliment. You should be happy I'm saying this to you. So you see that a lot, you see women being objectified in that manner, that they're not people, they're objects of sexual desire.
I think we also need to clarify, too, that women are not the only victims of sexual assault or sexual harassment either. That I think traditionally people have really looked at it and said, okay, this is an issue between men and women. Well, sometimes it's between same-sex couples or women to men. It's not just women being victimized. I believe it's 1 in 7.
1 in 7 men
are also impacted by some type of sexual assault.
So not exactly a low number there either.
Right, right.
Okay. And I was reading a kind of a collection of writings by women talking about that. And with the street harassment thing, a woman who had actually pretty much just confronted this person in the supermarket that was doing it, and it quickly turned from, I'm being complimentary to you, to where it got nasty, which I think kind of brought out the reality of what it was.
Yes, and you see it especially if you take to social media or if you see people, the very modern, I work a lot with younger, with teenagers, with college students, and one of the more common things we see is if a guy, if you've ever heard the term, slide into the DMs, which is the direct messaging tool on Instagram, that's a very common way for individuals, not necessarily even to street harass, but to harass in general. And one of the things is, hey, baby, you know, you're gorgeous. You just lose that zero, get with me, like various things like that, especially even some who are married, some who are engaged. And the minute they turn these individuals down, it becomes just slur after slur after slur. And it's that sense that dominion, they want to hold that power. And that's really what it is. It's a power trip.
And now we've been hearing so much about the way men talk amongst themselves and say, well, that's just locker room talk. That kind of all figures into the mentality.
Well, the idea, the locker room talk, and I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about it. If you're familiar with the Gillette ad that made a lot of news, it's, you know, I'm a married woman. I have a husband, and he has a father, and, you know, brothers, and there's men everywhere. And I think the truth of the matter is good men hold themselves to a higher standard. And men, I'm happy there's a conversation around that. That idea of what it takes to be a man, to be a good man. You know, I speak, you're married too. So it's like you think about the sons that you're raising or, you know, the men that you know in your life. And what that is to hold each other, and women too, to a higher standard of treating humans, you know, the golden rule. That's really what this boils down to.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, we have definitely have a responsibility as parents, to really raise our boys up to be a part of that generation that's respectful to others. And as Rachel was saying, really hold themselves to a higher standard and really, you know, expect more of themselves than a lot of the demeaning attitudes and behaviors that come forth in our culture.
And it seems like this has had a kind of a rebirth of awareness, and it's been in the news a lot. Is that simply because of the you know, what we're experiencing in the country now? Has it come forward again?
Well, I liken a lot of this to the Me Too movement. So that's been about a year or two since that really hit the scene, and I'm really grateful that it's reawakened this conversation, because the issue itself, the conversation had the rebirth. The issue never died, and that's the truth. People, you know, and I say people because it's women and men have been suffering in silence for centuries, for decades. This is, you know, the oldest problem in the world, and now that we're finally at a point where, you know, people are able in the media to publicly, you know, call out that these things are happening, like especially in Hollywood with men who are victimizing these, you know, young actresses, calling out bad behavior. It's a blessing, because we need to start having those conversations just in general about what is acceptable for us as a society.
I know, I mean, as far back as I can remember, probably, you know, to high school, grade school, you know, people talking about Hollywood and the casting couch, and it was almost as if it was just a kind of wink, wink thing. But now the reality of that is coming out, I guess, through the Me Too movement, and through the, you know, these just insane amount of people and celebrities that have said, hey, this happened to me.
Yes, absolutely. And it's the celebrities, they themselves are just representative of the larger, you know, the reality of what it is to be, you know, especially not just a young person, but a person in America. And I don't want to forget the men too, but, you know, like, you know, a man or a woman, especially a woman in America, like dealing with this. And that's, you know, as someone, like I myself am a survivor of that, you know, and, you know, so many people, when I go into schools right here in our community, I have so many young people identifying that they too are going through this, and you see it, you know, in all of the counties we serve. And that's a powerful thing to realize, that there are so many young voices who are realizing, like, I need to speak out about this.
And it's, I mean, a lot of this stuff is stuff we can go out on the street and see. I mean, it's not like it's something that's hidden behind closed doors in many cases. It's, I mean, I could probably walk from here to the other side of Lewisburg and see somebody act crude to a woman.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely a problem. That, you know, we at Transitions have really, our goal is to educate the community and educate the public, not only on the work that we do, but also on different issues and things that happen in the community. And really, for us, for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we feel like, you know, now is really the time, as Rachel was saying, to get the conversation going and to really make sure, even with children, that we're having this conversation with them on appropriate ways to act and how to be respectful towards others, and that it's not okay to make comments, even if they seem small. It's not okay to make comments that demean somebody or make somebody feel bad.
And forgive me if I'm sounding wound up, but, you know, it's like I have a wife, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and this the more I talk about this, the angrier I get.
Well, and I think, too, that's when we all need to come together as a society and educate and work together to really really raise up a generation that's going to make things different. You know, these are the children that we're raising up are really going to be the world changers, and to really, you know, raise our daughters and our sons to really live to a higher standard than sometimes is expected of them.
Do you think there has been improvement in some of these areas? Have we seen improvement, or are we just getting it visible enough now that now we can start that?
Yeah, that's I actually go into the schools. That's part of what I do, is I work with as young as pre-K all the way up to college and college level. So I have seen it firsthand that these kids are more aware, not just of what we're talking about, like social responsibility, but also mental health. They're more acutely in tune with, you know, what's going on. And I would say in the changes, just even from the grade levels, like dealing with current college students all the way down, you know, I had enlightening conversations with seventh graders the other week right here in Union County. And to sit there and these seventh graders, these 12-year-olds talking to me and, you know, with like complete knowledge and comprehension of these subjects and saying, like, this is why this is an issue. This is what's happening in our community, and this is why it's bothering us here, even in our school. To have kids, you know, be aware of these things and be able to have the language and knowledge, it's powerful.
Yeah, just knowing what you're dealing with. I mean, yes. If a seventh grader doesn't really have the background, you just sort of go with it.
Well, and you think about it from the perspective of that mental health component. You know, we see these young people, they're finally being able to recognize that something isn't right. And so for trauma is multi-generational, it's lasting. You know, a lot of with sexual assault especially, a lot of perpetrators may themselves as children been assaulted. So for them, you know, to realize as a young age, we go in and we try to teach, you know, not only this is a way to respect others, but this is a safe, you know, touch. What is a safe and unsafe touch? And, you know, respecting their bodies and being able to know that there are trusted people out there to help. That's what we try to do here at Transitions.
Now, Rachel mentioned pre-K up. I mean, do you get people that say, well, that's too soon to address these things?
Yes, I think that is oftentimes the mentality that people have, but they also have to understand that we need to be having these conversations with kids. Now, of course, when we have the conversation with these children, we do it in age-appropriate ways. We don't come into a kindergarten class and talk to them like we would to seventh and eighth graders. We really do gear it towards, we have programs that run all the way, as Rachel was saying, from pre-K all the way up to seniors, and they're geared specifically to that age range. And so I think, you know, as parents too, it's never too early to start teaching children about safe touches and who are safe people, because oftentimes we're teaching the stranger danger, but we're finding that it's oftentimes not strangers who are perpetrating against our children and people. It's usually people that we know and people that you're supposed to be able to trust that we're finding are the ones who are perpetrating against children.
And you're talking to all genders, so you're dealing with that next generation as well that is going to know how to act.
Yes, and that's, you know, like what you were saying to follow up kind of on that is, like, you see it in the media too. Like, on Netflix, that sensation of Abducted in Plain Sight, you hear people talking about that. You think about the reality of, you know, the surviving R. Kelly. Like, this is everywhere on the headlines right now, and kids are not immune to that. Kids are seeing what's on TV. Kids are watching the news. I mean, WNEP every day, you know, rape trial, assault trial. Kids know. So that's why one of the things we teach, not only is it what is happening and what are safe touches, but also when should you tell a secret? When should you tell and who should you tell? And that's one of the things that I implore parents is to have that uncomfortable conversation with your little one from the earliest age. And it's not a one and done. It's an ongoing of, you need to trust us and we're never going to be mad at you for telling that kind of secret. We're never going to be angry at you.
Okay. And so how many times have we heard that, you know, someone lives for years with something like this that doesn't deal with it because they feel it's their fault.
They feel it's their fault, and they feel that they have to respect, you know, this is a secret. I know in one of the educational tools, it's, you know, the uncle is perpetrating against the niece, you know, and that's mom's brother, and, you know, he was buying her off with presents and everything. We showed the children that it's like, look, the mom will never be angry at you for coming forward because you don't deserve to ever feel this kind of pain. And we always try to tell the kids as young as possible, like, there are so many people here who want the best for you, love you, and never want... You don't have to feel, quote, icky inside. That's, you know, you never need to feel that way. Okay. And that's with the youngsters, you know, it's so important then, because then they don't have to, you know, hold that trauma and let it grow and manifest in other ways.
Because, I mean, somebody living with this, I mean, how does that impact people in the future?
Well, what we're seeing is there's a big push for being trauma-informed. And the biggest thing that we see is a lot of times people coping with this type of assault maybe that happened when they were younger, not being able to deal with it, not being able to talk about it, have coped. Their coping mechanism has been alcohol and drugs or some other type of harmful behavior. And we're finding, again, as Rachel said, it's very generational. And so if the trauma is of the early assault is not dealt with, we're dealing with a generation we're dealing with the increase in suicides, and we're dealing with the increase in drug and alcohol abuse. And, you know, we're so often treating the symptoms, which are, you know, the drug and alcohol abuse, instead of taking a look at the root cause and really look, you know, going back and dealing with the trauma that had occurred.
And 60% of all individuals who go through, like, sexually motivated, the quote is intimate partner violence, so that's sexual assault and domestic violence, 60% of the victims have a co-occurring substance use disorder, and that's from the American Society of Addiction Medicine.
What else does Transitions do in this regard to get the word out?
Not only do we educate, you know, we have the services for survivors and their families, so we have counseling, we have, you know, legal advocacy, but from our end, what we do with the education, not only are we teaching about what, just as Lisa said, what we offer, but we also host events, too, for the general community. Like, for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we're actually holding a public walk, right here in Huffnagle Park in Lewisburg. Registration's at 10 a.m., it's the Walk for No More. And this event, we encourage, it's family-friendly, it's for all ages, it's for everyone in the entire area, all counties, to come out and take a stand against this kind of behavior. We will have prizes, there'll be food, selfie stands, you know, come wearing teal or purple, those are the colors, teal for sexual assault awareness. And No More is a national organization where many celebrities, many famous names have partnered to really say, you know, this is unacceptable. So for April, you know, we're hosting this. It's a fun day in the park to walk around Lewisburg, enjoy the weather, and say, I don't want this here in my community. Let's take a stand.
Final thought, what you would want to say to anybody out there that, is being victimized or potentially?
Please, what I would say to people who are struggling in silence is please know that you can reach out to us. We have a hotline that's 24/7. There will always be a live person who answers your call. So if you ever are confused, just don't know where to turn, you can certainly call that hotline, and there will be somebody on the other end who is really willing to listen and to offer help and can fill you in kind of on the services that we offer. Our services are all completely free of charge, and they are 100% confidential. So we really want people to know that this is a safe place for them to call and get help.
Rachel, if you could give us the website, hotline, and so forth, and if you want to add any final thoughts.
Of course. So our website's super easy. It's www.transitionsofpa.org. So just our name of Pennsylvania. Our 24-hour hotline, and this is, when we say 24/7, we mean it. This is Christmas at 2 in the morning. We are here. 1-800-850-7948. And I'll say it one more time. 1-800-850-7948. And we have a Facebook that I respond to. We have an Instagram, and we are always available. And if there's anything, you know, I just want to say, as someone who's been through this, I've been, you know, my darkest day, I felt like I was the only person, and I promise you, I survived this. You are not alone. You are not the only person. If you're out there feeling that, I'm here on the other side, and I'm telling you, it's beautiful here. So reach out. We are always here, and we understand what you're going through.
That's a perfect final line. You're not alone. That's kind of the whole basis of this place.
That's why we do what we do, because we never want anyone to feel like they're, you know, lost at sea, because we are your lighthouse.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.